Let's go to my first guests this Saturday morning. Two of the Lost Boys from Dilworth School. Mark Stauffer may be a familiar voice because of his radio and TV work. He's also a writer and filmmaker. And the new docudrama he's created, The Lost Boys of Dilworth, charts the historic systemic abuse at the Auckland school. Mark is with us from the Netherlands, I think, this morning. Kia ora, Mark.
Amsters.
Fantastic. Lovely to have you with us. Now, the crimes, of course...
You should see the moon. It's
the moon?
Beautiful. Oh. And also, I'm looking at my bookshelf and I'm thinking about what you just said. I've got so many books I've given away.
Ah, so you've given your books away and they haven't come back too?
No, never, never come back.
This is the thing. I have friends who say never lend books. Like, they'll lend you anything else, but they won't lend books because books have a way of walking out the door and not walking back in.
Yeah, yeah. Where are you from? Susie, where are you from? Because my grandfather was from Glasgow.
I'm from Edinburgh, which there's a bit of rivalry between those two places.
Yep.
But yeah, originally from Edinburgh.
Slightly.
With just a bit with a New Zealand father and bits of Irish family and Scottish family. And it's a whole mixture via London.
Yeah. Right. Okay, I get it. Yeah, I get the accent.
Great to have you with us, Mark. Also with us in the Auckland studio is Neil Harding, another lost boy who's featured in the documentary and who is leading the charge to hold Dilworth accountable. Neil Morena, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both of you for being with us this morning. I had a watch at the documentary earlier this week. It premieres, I think, tomorrow on TVNZ and will be available on demand. And I was really struck, Mark. Well, I was really struck at the beginning where you go back to Dilworth. And you're looking at the school from the outside. What was that like for you?
It was really hard, actually, because I was there with Neil, and we wandered around outside and, you know, looked at the chapel where I was raped multiple times. And then Neil and I actually went into the school and spoke to the headmaster. But it smelt. This is so weird, I think. But the fragrance was the same, right? And then I couldn't help but think about all the kids there and how I just hope that what happened to me doesn't happen to them.
It's interesting you talk about the smell. It's such an evocative sense that it can take you straight back. The years fall away and it can be very confronting.
Baking anything, you know. I mean, you were just talking about baking before, but yeah, the smell of your mother's cooking, or the smell of, you know, your father's cologne as you embrace him. It's the most powerful, I think, and evocative of all senses.
Neil, for you were there as well, not on camera for that point. But what was it like for you to return? Because you have returned a few times.
I could not believe Mark's courage. And it was a privilege to be with him as he went back and faced something that I just don't know is indescribable, really. And in that moment, I have just incredible respect for Mark. I think if there were Victoria Crosses for children, he deserved one. And then I think this docudrama is really, I mean, he's the sort of Charles Upham of things like that. And this docudrama really should be a bar to his Victoria Cross. The courage that he showed as a child to stand up at the time, and then now the courage to come back and confront those memories. Because really what this is about, we just want a safer world. Among other things, but we just want to make sure that tomorrow's children are safe. And to date, those opportunities for us to heal and have that have been denied.
Mark, for you, what was the catalyst to make the documentary?
Oh, Lord. You're really asking that question? But do not ask me if I've been affected by my experience at Dilworth, because I do not have a psychiatrist living in my brain. A friend of mine said to me 3 years ago, look, you're a screenwriter. This is an amazing story. It's almost unbelievable. Why don't you write it? So I thought, that's kind of smart. So I did. And then I went, okay, who's going to make this thing? And then I looked around in New Zealand, and Screen Time was the only place that would make it, really. And so I thought, okay, I've got to go through this. And then the person who said that to me said, don't you think it'd be quite good for you to write this? Like, you haven't confronted your experience at Dilworth for 40 years, and I had not. And they said, it might be kind of good, but it collapsed me. I died afterwards. I didn't, it was really hard to cope with. Really hard.
What do you mean by that? Because you are a survivor and you're the filmmaker. You've got this dual role. Was this the first time that you had really looked it full in the face?
Yes. It was the first time I've lived overseas for my entire life. So after Dilworth, I left New Zealand. I had a kind of a tiny radio career. And then after that, I left. So 40 years, you know. I'm 60 now. I'm old. And I'm creaky. So I'm an old chap. And then, as I say, 4 years ago, someone said, you know that thing that happened to you? Because I never spoke about it to anyone, ever. Really, you know. It was my humiliating secret that I was raped. And then someone said to me, look, you gotta, maybe a good thing is to, you know, you're a writer, right? You're a screenwriter. Because I was, you know, 20 years in Hollywood. I wrote lots of scripts. And someone said to me, you know that old story about telling, you know, your story, maybe you should do that. And I was like, crikey dick, I'm not going there. And then I did. And so that's been this journey. And then I met Neil 3 years ago and told the story.
What?
Really tough. Honestly, like super tough.
Why do you think you didn't want to tell the story?
I think I'm stupid for doing so in some ways, because and that sounds bad, but because I compartmentalized it right in my brain, little box in the back. No hippocampus involved, and just put it there for, you know, as I say, I'm 60, so for 45 years, like it, and I just hid it away. And then someone said, this is a great story. And it, not so much a great story. This is a story that needs to be told, dickwad. I'm like, how do you mean? I'm like, and my friend is like, if you don't tell it, no one else will. No one will tell this story. And so I went, I get it. All right, yeah, slightly. So it was, yeah, tough as hell, you know. Really killed me.
What was it like after you told the story?
It was awful. Neil knows this. He was there. I came back to Auckland to, you know, to be interviewed for the story, tell the story and stuff. And then my body just completely broke down. So I was sick as hell. You know, like food poisoning for the time afterwards. And it was really tough.
Sounds like it was, I don't know, almost like therapy.
Well, that was the original idea by the, you know, the suggestive dickwad who told me to tell my story, you know. And I did, and I paid the price for doing it. And even now, like even doing publicity, like this interview with you, Susie, it's painful. Neil, however, has been going through this crap for 6 years, 7 years, and has been fighting against this behemoth called DeWitt School, right? Which he and I have. This is not rocket science. We realize that there are, you know, it's a property development company, multi-billion-dollar, right? DeWitt School itself is just a front for that. It's about money.
We will get to some of that in a moment.
Yes.
Mark, thank you. Okay. I appreciate you talking to us today. Stay with us because it is an extraordinary experience that you went through, and it is an extraordinary documentary. You're listening to Saturday Morning on RNZ National with Susie Ferguson. My guests, Mark Stauffer and Neil Harding. This is in connection with The Lost Boys of Dilworth, which will be on TVNZ tomorrow. Neil, coming to you, I know you don't like the term sharing your story. Why is that?
Oh, it just triggers. It's the thing that we find with survivors, that certain words, certain things can trigger. And I don't know if it's something for me, the word story is a synonym for fiction. There's a sense that, you know, one of the things about survivors not being believed, and when you say, oh, come and share your story, tell me your story, it kind of almost sounds like, what, you're not, but it's the truth. It's not a story. So that's kind of that, there's a visceral reaction that I have with it that other people don't have. I mean, it's accepted. But I just think sharing your experience against telling your story, I think the difference in those terms is significant. Just coming back to Mark, though, I mean, I think he dove face first into Pandora's box, and so did Matt, one of the other guys on that docudrama. And it's double-edged, Susie, you know, to get the kind of quality docudrama that we've got. It's double-edged for those guys. They had to confront, and they did it so honestly and amazingly that they have an ability to articulate some of the most horrific stuff that happened, you know, next to Dio, you know, in Epsom, Remuera, you know, in the 1970s. The thing that gets me is that the sort of setting of this docudrama is around 1978. You know, I was in the dorm with Matt. He was two beds away from me. Stauffer was there. He was a couple of years older. Vaughan Sexton was there. I was in the choir with him. I don't know the other guy, Sean, who's since passed. But it, you know, it's just decades later. Why is it that it's decades later? Why is it that Mark's 60 that this is coming out? And there are real reasons why.
What was your experience?
It was terrifying. It was a free-for-all. I was 11. Something that's hard to describe when you're 11 going through that, just the loss of innocence in so many levels of just physical, emotional, sexual abuse. And, you know, I was my housemaster sent me to the Scoutmaster, and it's in the Independent Inquiry report that I was given as a gift, supplied to him. But fortunately for me, I had the nous somehow to not freeze, and I was able to get out of the first situation. The next one was with the minister, Peter Taylor. He did the same thing, and I leapt like a jack-in-a-box in the same spot that, in the same room that Matt was raped. And I just cannot believe how close I was to getting what they got. And that's driven me to say, I got off relatively lightly compared to that. I'll stand up and wave the flag, and because I got to leave as well, I refused to go back. I was being groomed by Leonard Cave. He's another one that's in prison. The housemaster that sent me to Ian Wilson was Rex McIntosh. He passed away. I had a sadistic tutor that wanted to, that was looking for reasons to cane me and was terrorising me as a tutor. He was also a sporting coach of mine. I was surrounded by paedophiles.
But yet you shied away from your experience. Did you think that it wasn't, in quotes, bad enough?
I always qualified my abuse. I've talked about it my whole life. I have shared it with people, but I qualified it as attempted abuse because I leapt to my feet. I didn't know whether I was a victim or not. But knowing that the terror that that invoked at the time, because you weren't allowed to say no in that place. So the fact I had said no and not complied with whatever I was supposed to do, I thought there were going to be consequences, and the terror that I felt after I'd left, thinking that what I thought was safe, these men that were looking after and mentoring me were actually now threats to my safety, I thought that was, that's what got me the most, really. And since then, what's got me is the fact that the school knew the whole time, and if they hadn't have caned Mark for reporting his abuse, I wouldn't have been abused. Matt wouldn't have been abused. None of this would have happened. It would have stopped back then in 1978, but this went on for decade after decade after decade. The abuse continued. Dilworth knew the whole time and failed to stop it, instead punished kids for reporting. And what they did to Mark is just indescribable. And the fact that that doesn't cross a threshold for vicarious liability or perverting the course of justice, 233 boys and counting were sexually abused, and no one at that school has been held accountable other than the paedophiles. And it doesn't cross a threshold, apparently. And I'm going, what kind of threshold do you need
to have
someone criminally liable for being complicit in the sexual abuse of hundreds of boys? And ask Dilworth Trust Board. Ask them to do an interview. 6 years, they will not speak about it. They will not confront their role in what happened. They will not call out any of those people that were accountable, and so therefore they deny us the opportunity to heal.
What were the ramifications of this happening at such a young age on the rest of your life? What's the cascade?
It's hard to predict when you're 11. You know, you're going, well, what did it do? You're in a neurodevelopmental phase. First, the first thing was it destroyed my innocence. My first sexual encounter wasn't an enjoyable experience that had consent or anything like that. It was some perverted act, and numerous attempts, really. Looking back, my when you look at Dilworth, Dilworth is a school for kids that have straightened circumstances. You know, we all get there, stuff's happened to us. You know, I had abandonment and rejection issues. That's now gone from abandonment and rejection, the reinforcement of that and not having male role models in my life and the breach of that, the breach of trust of men in those areas of responsibility, it's pretty damaging. But it's become a betrayal, and I think betrayal is, they have betrayed not just us, but they have betrayed James and Isabella Dilworth's efforts to set up a school that produces good and useful citizens. And the irony is, Mark and I and the other guys that are going back, that want accountability, that want justice, that want tomorrow's children to be safe, that want, we petition for a Dilworth law at the Royal Commission calling for mandatory reporting of child sexual abuse and child abuse to police. We just go, we are the good and useful citizens, and we're going against the very institution that has effectively been hijacked by an inner circle of people that are just protecting themselves, is what I've seen. 6 years of bashing my head against the current trust board.
Stay with us, Neil. Mark, if I can come back to you, in terms of making the documentary, how did you go about finding the former students with the experiences who would also be prepared to go on record?
There's nothing I can say that will not, you know, be better than what Neil's just said. He's the genius in this, the encyclopedia. That's why all the old boys, the lost boys, we want him to have a knighthood. It's hard to find people who stand up, right? And aren't anonymous. It's easy to be anonymous, but to sit in front of the camera and answer questions about being raped as a child, that's tough, really tough. Neil Harding has done that for 6 years, 7 years. And finding those other guys, it was tough. Matt, God, what happened to him? It's hard to explain because I think I'm like old now, so I the pain of being, of suffering, of living in dread, of living that lifestyle my entire, you know, for 3 years, 4 years, is tough to explain to someone. So you weren't safe at dawn, you weren't safe at dusk. You were never safe.
What about the night raids, Mark? We weren't safe when we were asleep.
Yeah, okay. So here's another thing you don't understand, is that it wasn't just the tutors, as we called them, or the masters, as we called them. It was the other boys. They were encouraged to, you know, do things to us. It's really painful to think back to. The making of this documentary destroyed me totally. Talking about it now is so difficult. It's tough. And I humiliating to a certain degree, because I thought I was, you know, look, you know, I'm a father of two, you know, divorced, but father of two. My children are my cherished objects in life. I love them so much, and I look after them. So that's what this has taught me to a certain degree. So I'm slightly insane about that, right? Because I'm insane about what happened to me. So maybe it's good in that way. Is there anything else good about this? No, there's not. Mm. Because I was... I had no expectation of what happened to me. These, you know, mofos, sorry, RNZ, they took advantage of me. And now we know, as Neil has explained, that this was a magnet for this sort of crime, right? So this pedophile thing, and there was no such word as pedophile back then, was, DeWitt School was a magnet for pedophilia. And now this $2 billion company will not do anything about it. They're just covering it up.
Mark, you know, if you could see some of the texts that are coming into us this morning here at RNZ National, they're just absolutely piling, and I'll give you a flavour of them. Thank you to Mark and Neil. The lack of accountability from various government departments and individuals in regards to abusive behaviours in institutions is still going on, such as this person says with Gloria Vale. Another person says, as the mother of a Dilworth survivor, many thanks for your courage in coming forward with your experiences. Such a betrayal of trust on a massive scale for all the children and parents of those involved. Another one, Atamarie, this is a hard listen, but Mark and Neil, from all survivors, you are absolute heroes to speak up. It is hard enough to do in your own circle of friends and family. Much love and respect to you for fighting against systematic abuse. More and more. Another one saying, a survivor here in Northland. Wow, intense. Susie, can you please gently ask the guys about therapy? Have you had therapy in your life for other things, when in fact PTSD was underneath other issues? This is the problem with PTSD. It sneaks up and shows up in other problems. Mark, what would your response be to that?
Lordy. Lordy McLordy. Recently, actually, because I needed to. And so the doco broke me. And I didn't realize how consuming it was, you know? It really fucking... It destroyed me, and I didn't know what to do. And so the next thing was, well, have some therapy. And so I did. I am. And it's helping. But up until confronting this space, confronting what happened to me, it really took me for a ride. Oh, my God. Neil will testify to this. When I was in Auckland, I fell over, right, Neil?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You're just saying, mm-hmm.
You did.
What happened?
Oh, just collapse. And I think, look, Mark's braved his way through life. He's that's what I say about him diving headfirst into Pandora's box. He'd closeted that thing away and got on with it and achieved some amazing things in his life. But the only way he could do that was by putting it away in a box. So, you know, it's...
Totally.
If he hadn't have put it away in a box, he wouldn't have been able to achieve the things he's achieved, I think. And I think it's extraordinary. Mark is just an extraordinary human being. The fact that he could achieve what he's achieved in life, he's got a Wikipedia page, and experience what he experienced. It's just unbelievable that he could come through that.
Mm.
But do you come through that? And I think he's about to go through a period now where he needs to work out, what do I do now I've opened that box, because I'm not quite sure that he can close it.
You're listening to RNZ National Saturday Morning with Susie Ferguson. Neil Harding and Mark Stauffer are my guests. We're talking about The Lost Boys of Dilworth, which premieres tomorrow on TVNZ. Neil, if I can talk to you about how this has all been handled, the independent inquiry, the way that you felt as you were going through the process of that, and how accountable it has been possible to make them.
Look, firstly, Dilworth won't answer questions. I don't know if they've got a communications policy. If they have, they don't follow it. There are questions about their accountability. They will not answer to survivors. They will not answer to media. They've just gone, shut up, write it out, it'll go away eventually. When they set the scope of the independent inquiry, that document, 500-page document, is just some amazing work was done. Interestingly, at the beginning, it went up to 2018. I first began dealing with the Trust Board in April 18. So I was put outside of scope of the inquiry. So when I went to wanting to discuss with the inquiry about my experiences with the Trust Board since that time, I was not allowed to. The Dilworth lawyers were very adamant that I wasn't allowed to speak to the inquiry about that, so I didn't. So I had a 100-page report that I never got to share, which included emails and correspondence. And then I see in the report there's a Chapter 9 on Dilworth since then and the amazing things they're doing, and it's like, yeah, okay. That left me a little bit voiceless. They've set up a redress program. Now, what that means is that Dilworth have written the redress, written this financial compensation program that they've decided to call redress, not made it collaborative with survivors. We were calling from the outset that we wanted a collaborative process because that is best practice. They would not do that. They would not take on feedback from the survivors. We did a Survey Monkey through our class action, and we gave feedback to them. They would not do it. They would not listen to the Anglican Archbishop, who said you should not put financial parameters on your redress program because you're giving it to an independent panel. But they did. So they wrote their own redress program and have now given it to an independent panel to apply their scheme that is not fit for purpose. Now, the independent panel now have their professional freedom compromised by the fact they're dealing with Dilworth's parameters. So the institution that harmed us is looking to do their own redress program. And really effectively what we have is Dilworth having their mana restored. If redress is around restoring mana, the institution is worried about restoring its own mana. This has got nothing to do with survivors.
And marking their own homework.
Totally. And unfortunately, they are standing up, giving themselves a standing ovation and a pat on the back again like they always do. And what really concerns me, Susie, and you need to listen to this really carefully, please, going forward, if this redress program that Dilworth doing is going to be considered a blueprint for how the state go forward with their redress program, we have got carnage coming. This is not fit for purpose, what they have done.
What do you mean by carnage?
If this style of redress program is put forward to state survivors, when they go through their process following the Royal Commission, they can't be using this redress program of Dilworth as a blueprint.
Because?
It's not fit for purpose. There's a document that I gave Dilworth twice, which they wouldn't acknowledge receiving, how to engage sensitively with survivors, written by the New South Wales government following their Royal Commission. I've given them that document of, it's a step-by-step process of things. Refuse to follow it. So it's, yeah.
Are you saying the way that this has ultimately been handled has compounded the problem and made it worse?
I believe that I cannot enter their redress process. In fact, I asked to speak to them, to the independent redress panel. I was told, no, I can't. I have to become registered and go through the process to explain my concerns with the program that would stop me from being able to enter the program. I actually have to go through the program, register, and go through it to voice my concerns about it.
So,
And the class action lawyers were not allowed to speak to the independent redress panel didn't want to speak to them because they're independent.
So engaging with that redress panel, do you know how many people have chosen to go through that route?
Look, at the end of the day, I think I'm one of the last ones because it's not fit for purpose. I'm really worried about it.
Hmm.
But it's difficult because some guys might be okay with it. I just know too much. And for me, you see, redress is it's got to be tailored. Redress, you know, the worst thing that can happen with an institution is that someone gets harmed. And if they get harmed, the redress is about that journey of healing and finding peace and restoring mana. And that person can become useful to that organisation or institution because they can provide a survivor lens across policies and protocols going forward. They've got to be handled, it has to be tailored somehow. And the problem is when you've got hundreds of guys going through redress because Dilworth failed so miserably, knowingly, they've decided to just put everyone through the same process, put them through the mincer. It's a bit like that Pink Floyd video.
You talk about carnage and how people may be further harmed if they go through this process.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see as being potentially the ramifications of it?
Oh, look, for me, it's just a reaffirmation of being worthless, a reaffirmation of being betrayed. Of being voiceless. And it's supposed to be about healing. And it's none of those things. I just found that because we're not at the centre of it, the survivor needs to be, it's the survivor's redress program. It's not the institution's. And no amount of money will ever make it right. So they'll come up with a number and say, well, here's a number, because no amount of money will make it right, so we'll just give you a little bit. And then we'll say, oh, and here's money for future counselling, and here's a full and final clause. And it's like, how can they? How can they be that good to know my future counselling needs?
Mm.
And with a full and final clause?
We've
it's
had a
just
message.
So wrong.
We've had a message in from Mal in Auckland who says, being a support person for a couple of survivors, my observation is that the Dilworth redress program is wholly inadequate, both financially and in terms of accountability. That certainly seems to be echoing exactly what you're saying, Neil.
Nothing happens for us until there's accountability of the school. And so that means, can the police find reason to get this across the line for perverting the course of justice? I'm not sure. So what does that mean? And it's no fault to the police and the efforts of police. Is it? It's our legislation needs to change. I just look at what happened at Dilworth and go, if no one is held accountable criminally for what happened in that environment, then we need to move the goalposts. We have to change laws. It's like, as a survivor, I look at this in survivor lens, and I'm looking at, okay, what is the impact of my brother, my Dilworth brothers, the fail to launch because they were 11 and 8, and they never kind of got to take off in life, the drug and alcohol dependency, the health issues, the crime, the all of those impacts, all of those things we're talking about in society, and I'm going, duh, obvious. Mm. Change the laws to protect children, because no child comes through child sexual assault okay.
Mark, a message that's just come in says this redress is for survivor healing. Accountability should be millions of dollars paid as compensation. Shut the school. What do you make of that?
No. So I think this, look, Neil and I disagree on some matters. I think Duluth should be closed down like Auschwitz. Right? Or raised to the ground. And like Auschwitz, it's like the, you know, ground zero of child rape. I'm sorry, that's what it is. So, Lovey Chapel, white stone buildings, you know, green grass. And did those feet in ancient times, the songs. The place is like, it's the plague on Western civilization in terms of our admission of pedophilia. It's still going on. Mm. I know it. And it's still going on. Just that. And for me as a 60-year-old man, I feel so sad about that. I tried, but I failed to break the Duluth pedophilia thing. And it's continuing. I know it is. Come on.
Why do you say you've tried and you failed?
Oh, why? Really obvious in the doco. Because my last chance at stopping it was I called the Sunday News at night.
Mm.
And then I was caught by one of the tutors for calling the Sunday News, and the only words I got out were, "I'm calling from an Auckland boarding school, and there's abuse happening," because there was no such word as pedophilia back then. Right, and then a tutor came in, hung up the phone, grabbed me by the scruff of the neck, as we used to say, and took me away. And then next day I was expelled. So I wasn't.
I was so grateful.
I was so grateful to get out of the school that I didn't continue on. I was, you know, 12 years old. I didn't call back. Whatever. When I was being expelled in the principal's office, Sunday News called back.
Mm.
And I heard the entire conversation. Hi, we had a call from a, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And a young boy who said that, you know, that you had abuse going on. And I listened to the principal, Peter Parr. He's dead, so there's no worries. And he said, no, of course not. Not here. Right? And so then I left with my mum. And didn't think about it again. I should have called back.
I don't think this is your failure to carry, though, Mark.
I've told him that.
Yeah.
He's a hero. He tried. The code of silence was so strong, and he had the courage to stand up to it at the time. It's so pervasive and so dark, that place.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think I really screwed up.
I really don't think it's your failure to carry, Mark.
But you're making up for it now, buddy.
I tell you what, thank you both very much for your time this morning on Saturday morning. Mark Stauffer and Neil Harding, two of the Lost Boys of Dilworth, and indeed the Lost Boys of Dilworth, will be premiering tomorrow on TVNZ, also on TVNZ Plus, on demand. So much feedback coming in on this. Renee says, good to hear an interview with survivors of abuse in care. So many horror stories. I've been talking with the Royal Commission on this. Please keep telling them. If you want to check out our website, rnz.co.nz/Saturday, you'll be able to find some helplines there, if indeed that is something you need. We will hopefully get to more of your feedback after the news.